Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're visiting in a most interesting conversation with Michael Waller. Mike is a man I've known for many years. I've been very proud to have him associated with our Center for Security Policy as a senior fellow these days. He is also a senior reporter and indeed one of two national security reporters with a new, very important initiative, the American Media Institute. He is also the author of co-author of a brand new book, The Meeting, The Ideological Challenge of Islamism, How to Combat Modern Radical Islam. And we're talking in particular about a subject that Mike has studied closely, the subject of a chapter in that book entitled The Muslim Brotherhood, Doctrine, Strategy, Operations, and Vulnerabilities. And Mike, you were discussing a little bit about how the Obama administration is conducting itself with respect to the Brotherhood and various organizations and operatives, in addition to the Secretary of Homeland Security meeting with and otherwise empowering Muslim Brotherhood front organizations this week. Last week, the Attorney General of the United States was speaking to another of the groups, the Muslim Advocates, that has Muslim Brotherhood ties. And this is a group that I think has only received very positively her statement to the effect that, you know, she was going to begin prosecuting people who had engaged in hate speech, as she defines it, against Muslims, that it could include an awful lot of people, including thee and me, I'm afraid, if she has her way. But before we get to the implications of all of that, let's just spend another minute talking about how what Barack Obama is doing these days was really enabled or certainly facilitated by what was done under the George W. Bush administration, that this Muslim Brotherhood civilization jihad was waged quite effectively against George W. Bush, especially after 9/11. Talk about that.
The Muslim Brotherhood was already poised to act when 9/11 hit. They already had their people working in the White House Office of Public Liaison, who were close to Karl Rove, President Bush's top political advisor. They already had actually had a meeting scheduled at 3 o'clock at the White House to meet with President Bush, who was going to do what Bill Clinton did not do, which was to come out against the so-called secret evidence law. And, of course, that meeting didn't happen at the White House because the White House was on lockdown because the Pentagon was burning. So instead, the White House staffers working under Karl Rove went over to Grover Norquist's conference room, and that's where they had this meeting with a group run by leaders of Muslim Brotherhood front organizations. So afterward, the president stands up in public at the Islamic Center, flanked by Muslim Brotherhood front leaders, to proclaim his solidarity with the Muslim community. But in so doing, he's showing all the other Muslims, hey, Bush is allied with the Muslim Brotherhood. We don't have a place at the table. And in so doing, the Muslim Brotherhood, through part of its civilization jihad, was able to marginalize the non-jihadi groups and marginalize any of its other rivals and dominate that space as the legitimate representatives of Muslims in America. And the Bush White House went for it. And throughout the entire administration, in general, the Bush administration stood toe-to-toe as a literal ally of these Muslim Brotherhood front organizations.
Let me just ask you, Mike, because this is really such a seminal development. It set the stage, I would argue, for not only the very profound misconstruction of a policy under George W. Bush, but it's, of course, been greatly exacerbated since he left office under his successor. And it does fit into this template of a different kind of jihad, a kind of subversive and stealthy, even seditious pursuit of exactly the same goals, as you say, the domination of the world by Sharia and its rule according to a caliph. I'm just wondering, as you back out sort of what you know about political warfare, it's really quite stunning that this has gone so unremarked. In fact, I was somewhat bemused by a new book that Karl Rove, speaking of the former right-hand man of George W. Bush, has just put out about William McKinley, in which he talks at great length about the derring do of that presidential candidate before he was elected. The inclusiveness, the effort to bring in different populations to or constituencies to be part of his new grand Republican coalition seems very much of a piece with what I think Carl was trying to do in 2000 and subsequently we saw the consequences of it with the Brotherhood's inside track as a result.
Yeah, and it's just a question of, do you understand who you're building your coalitions with? And this is where I can, you know, we can fault the left throughout the Cold War for making allies with the communists against conservatives and allowing the Communist Party to dominate the whole discussion of what peace is. And if you allow an extremist group like that to dominate the narrative, and then you either embrace that narrative or you marginalize those who criticize that narrative, then you're allowing the enemy to control the narrative, and then you're becoming complicit in that. So just like you had a peace movement here in America, of course, when Reagan comes out for peace through strength, he was really responding to the peace movement that was really peace through weakness. So the whole idea of peace through strength was to counter the Soviet-dominated narrative that peace would come at the cost of the United States unilaterally disarming before the Soviet threat. There was no room in the peace movement for any anti-Soviet activism.
And as you pointed out earlier, Mike, this is a continuing activity of the left. The communists are not what they were in the past, of course, but the Islamists are very much filling the void in terms of an enemy of this country with whom they seem to be all too willing to make common cause. And again, as both serious student of and practitioner of the business of political warfare, I wonder what your take is on the degree to which the left in this country has really enabled much of the Muslim Brotherhood's activities and made them vastly more formidable than they would otherwise have been.
They made it, they're part and parcel of the whole strategy behind civilizational jihad, not they themselves as the strategists, but as the civilizational jihadists relying on them fundamentally as part of their strategy to smash apart the system. So they're using leftist activism to destroy Judeo-Christian symbolism, to ban it from the public square, while at the same time allowing or even demanding Sharia-compliant imagery to be part of the public square. I'll give you a good example. Go to Dulles International Airport in Washington, D.C. Come back from an international flight. As soon as you get off the gate in Terminal B, the first thing you see is a big hanging banner of an image of a TSA, Homeland Security employee, wearing the Sharia-compliant headgear welcoming you to the United States.
Mike, what does that say to the Islamists amongst us? It's my reading of Sharia that has a very profound implication. And again, most of us just think we're being tolerant and politically correct. But is there something else that's afoot here?
Yes, they view it as submission. We are submitting to them, which is part of Sharia, and it's part of civilization jihad, to get your target society gradually to submit. And that is what we're doing every time we make these gestures, especially at our own expense. It's not as if you have Jewish Homeland Security employees wearing yarmulkes, because I've never seen one, right? So So it's not like, well, we're just allowing people to express their religious faith through headgear and not through the symbolisms. No, that's not what it is at all. This is submission as part of their supremacist doctrine.
Well, that's really the crux of the matter. We're going to come back to discuss the implications of that with J. Michael Waller right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.